was one of those pretty and charming girls who, by some freak of destiny, are born into families that have always held subordinate appointments. Possessing neither dowry nor expectations, she had no hope of meeting a man of wealth and distinction who would understand her, fall in love with her, and wed her. So she consented to marry a small clerk in the Ministry of Public Instruction. She dressed plainly because she could not afford to be elegant, but she felt as unhappy as if she had married beneath her. She was eternally restive under the conviction that she had been born to enjoy every refinement and luxury, depressed by her humble surroundings. The sordid walls of her dwelling, its worn furniture and shabby fabrics, were a torment to her. Details which another woman of her class would scarcely have noticed tortured her and filled her with resentment. She had no pretty gowns, no jewels, nothing. And yet she cared for nothing else. She felt that it was for such things as these that she'd been born. What joy it would have given her to attract, to charm, to be envied by women, courted by men. One evening, her husband returned home in triumph, with a large envelope in his hand. "Here's something for you," he cried. Hastily, she tore open the envelope and drew out a printed card with the following inscription: "The Minister of Public Instruction and Madame Georges Ramponneau have the honour to request the company of Monsieur and Madame Loisel at an at-home." Instead of being delighted, as her husband had hoped, she flung the invitation irritably on the table, exclaiming, "What good is that to me?" "Why, my dear, I thought you would be pleased. I had no end of trouble in getting it. Everybody is trying to get an invitation. It's very select, and only a few invitations are issued to the clerks. You will see all the officials there." She looked at him in exasperation and exclaimed petulantly, "What do you expect me to wear at a reception like that?" He had not considered the matter, but he replied, "Why, that dress you always wear to the theatre seems to me very nice indeed." He broke off. To his horror and consternation, he saw that his wife was in tears. "What on earth is the matter?" he gasped. With a violent effort, she controlled her emotion and, drying her wet cheeks, said in a calm voice, "Nothing. Only I haven't a frock, and so I can't go to the reception. Give your invitation to some friend in your office, whose wife is better dressed than I am." He was greatly distressed. "Let us talk it over, Mathilde. How much do you think a proper frock would cost? Something quite simple that would come in useful for other occasions afterwards." She considered the matter for a few moments, busy with her calculations, and wondering how large a sum she might venture to name without shocking his instincts of economy and provoking a prompt refusal. "I hardly know," she said at last, doubtfully, "but I think I could manage with 400 francs. He turned a little pale. She had named the exact sum that he had saved for buying a gun and treating himself to some Sunday shooting parties the following summer. But he replied, "Very well, I'll give you 400 francs. But mind you buy a really handsome gown." The day of the party drew near. But although her gown was finished, Madame Loisel seemed depressed and dissatisfied. "What is the matter?" asked her husband one evening. "You haven't been at all yourself the last 3 days. She answered, "It vexes me to think that I haven't any jewellery to wear. Not even a brooch. I shall feel like a perfect pauper. I would almost rather not go to the party." "You can wear some fresh flowers. They're very fashionable this year." She was not convinced. "No, there is nothing more humiliating than to have an air of poverty among a crowd of rich women." "Oh, how silly you are," exclaimed her husband. "Why don't you ask your friend, Madame Forestier, to lend you some jewellery? You know her quite well enough for that." She uttered a cry of joy. "Yes, of course. It never occurred to me." The next day she paid her friend a visit and explained her predicament. Madame Forestier went to her wardrobe, took out a large jewel case and placed it open before her friend. "Help yourself, my dear," she said. Madame Loisel saw some bracelets, a pearl necklace, A Venetian cross exquisitely worked in gold and jewels. She tried on these ornaments in front of the mirror and hesitated, reluctant to take them off and give them back. "Have you nothing else?" she kept asking. "Oh, yes, look for yourself. I don't know what you would prefer." At length, she discovered a black satin case containing a superb diamond necklace, and her heart began to beat with frantic desire. With trembling hands, she took it out, fastened it over her high-necked gown, and stood gazing at herself in rapture. Then, in an agony of doubt, she said, "Will you lend me this? I shouldn't want anything else." "Yes, certainly." She threw her arms around her friend's neck, kissed her effusively, and then fled with her treasure. It was the night of the reception. Madame Loisel's triumph was complete. All smiles and graciousness in her exquisite gown, she was the prettiest woman in the room. Her head was in a whirl of joy. All the men stared at her and inquired her name and begged for an introduction. All the junior staff asked her for waltzes. She even attracted the attention of the minister himself. It was close on 4 before she could tear herself away. Ever since midnight, her husband had been dozing in a little deserted drawing room, together with 3 other men whose wives were enjoying themselves immensely. He threw her outdoor wraps around her shoulders, unpretentious everyday garments whose shabbiness contrasted strangely with the elegance of her ball dress. Conscious of the incongruity, she was eager to be gone in order to escape the notice of the other women in their luxurious furs. The cab took them to the door, and they gloomily climbed the stairs to their dwelling. All was over for her. As for him, he was thinking that he would have to be in the office by 10 o'clock. She took off her wraps in front of the mirror for the sake of one last glance at herself in all her glory. But suddenly, she uttered a cry. The diamonds were no longer around her neck. "What is the matter?" asked her husband. She turned to him in horror. I've lost Madame Forestier's necklace." He started in dismay. "What? Impossible." They searched the pleats of the gown, the folds of the cloak, and all the pockets, but in vain. "You are sure you had it in the street? We should have heard it drop. It must be in the cab." "Yes, I expect it is. Did you take the number?" "No. Did you?" They gazed at each other, utterly appalled. "I will go over the ground that we covered on foot and see if I cannot find it." He left the house. Lacking the strength to go to bed, unable to think, she collapsed into a chair and remained there in her evening gown, without a fire. About 7 o'clock her husband returned. He had not found the diamonds. They applied to the police, advertised a reward in the newspapers, made inquiries of all the hackney cab offices. He visited every place that seemed to hold out a vestige of hope. His wife waited all day long in the same distracted condition, overwhelmed by this appalling calamity. Loisel returned home in the evening, pale and hollow-cheeked. His efforts had been in vain. "You must write to your friend," he said, "and tell her that you have broken the catch of the necklace and that you are having it mended. That will give us time to think things over." After a week had elapsed, they gave up all hope. Loisel, who looked 5 years older, said, "We must take steps to replace the diamonds." On the following day, they took the empty case to the jeweller, whose name was inside the lid. He consulted his books. "The necklace was not bought here, madam. I can only have supplied the case." They went from jeweller to jeweller in an endeavour to find a necklace exactly like the one they'd lost. At last, in the shop in the Palais Royal, they found a diamond necklace which seemed to them exactly like the other. Its price was 40,000 francs. The jeweller agreed to sell it to them for 36. Loisel had 18,000 francs left to him by his father, the balance of the sum he proposed to borrow. He raised loans in all quarters, 1,000 francs from one man, 500 from another, 5 louis here, 3 louis there. He gave promissory notes, agreed to exorbitant terms. He compromised his whole future and had to risk his signature, hardly knowing if he would be able to honor it. Overwhelmed by the prospect of future suffering, he went to fetch the new necklace and laid his 36,000 francs down on the jeweler's counter. When Madame Loisel brought back the necklace, Madame Forestier said reproachfully, "You ought to have returned it sooner. I might have wanted to wear it." To Madame Loisel's relief, she did not open the case. Supposing she'd noticed the exchange, what would she have thought? What would she have said? Perhaps she would have taken her for a thief. Madame Loisel now became acquainted with the horrors of extreme poverty. She made up her mind to it and played her part heroically. This appalling debt had to be paid, and pay it she would. The maid was dismissed, the flat was given up, and they moved to a garret. Dressed like a working woman, she went with her basket on her arm to the greengrocer, the grocer and the butcher, bargaining, wrangling, and fighting for every farthing. Each month some of the promissory notes had to be redeemed and others renewed in order to gain time. Her husband spent his evenings working at some tradesman's accounts, and at night he would often copy papers at 5 sous a page. This existence went on for 10 years. At the end of that time they had paid off everything, to the last penny. Madame Loisel now looked an old woman. Her hair was neglected, her skirts hung awry, her hands were red, her voice was no longer gentle. But now and then, when her husband was at the office, she would sit by the window and her thoughts would wander back to that faraway evening, the evening of her beauty and her triumph. What would have been the end of it if she had not lost the necklace? Who could say? How strange, how variable are the chances of life. How small a thing can serve to save or ruin you. One Sunday, she went for a stroll in the Champs-Élysées for the sake of relaxation after the week's work, and she caught sight of a lady with a child. She recognized Madame Forestier, who looked as young and as pretty and as attractive as ever. Madame Loisel felt a thrill of emotion. Should she speak to her? Why not? Now that the debt was paid, why should she not tell her the whole story? She went up to her. "Good morning, Jeanne." Her friend did not recognize her, and was surprised at being addressed so familiarly by this homely person. "I am afraid I do not know you. You must have made a mistake," she said hesitatingly. "No, I am Mathilde Loisel." Her friend uttered a cry. "Oh, dear Mathilde, how you've changed." "Yes, I have been through a very hard time since I saw you last. No end of trouble. And all through you."
"Through me? What do you mean?"
"You remember the diamond necklace you lent me to wear at the reception at the education office?"
"Yes. Well?"
"Well, I lost it."
"I don't understand. You brought it back to me."
"What I brought you back was another one, exactly like it. And for the last 10 years we've been paying for it. You will understand that it was not an easy matter for people like us who hadn't a penny. However, it's all over now. I can't tell you what a relief it is."
Madame Forestier stopped dead. "You mean to say that you bought a diamond necklace to replace mine?"
"Yes, and you never noticed it? They were certainly very much alike."
She smiled with ingenuous pride and satisfaction. Madame Forestier seized both her hands in great distress.
"Oh, my poor dear Mathilde! Why, mine was only imitation. At the most it was worth 500 francs."